Who would have thought a couple of decades ago that agriculture in Southern Oregon would be so heavily focused on wine? But that's been the shift over that time. Some businesses kept their old names, but where those names once ended in orchards, now they end in vineyards. The growth in the wine industry in Southern Oregon is well documented by the recent release of the annual Vineyard and Winery Census Report covering the year 2012. Here to talk about what's in that report, we have with us Michael Donovan, who's the Managing Director at Irvine Vineyard. He's also President Emeritus of the Oregon Wine Growers Association Board and the Oregon Wine Board. So three hats, one head. Michael Donovan, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So tell us about the report itself, the annual Vineyard and Winery Census Report. We get that it's annual, but how long has it been out there and what sorts of things does it cover?
Well, the 2012 just got released, and I have to give credit at least for the last 2 years to Southern Oregon University stepping in and actually through under the supervision of Greg Jones actually compiling these statistics, which previously had always been done through the USDA. But with cutbacks on federal funding, that was no longer available. And it's really a critical part of what we do. I mean, it's nice for us to be able to talk about these kinds of facts and figures, but actually there are people who depend on these figures in terms of the average price paid per ton for grapes, for the various varietals. It's written into their contracts that it has to be, you know, for instance, maybe 10% or 10% above or below the state average. This establishes the state average. And without Southern Oregon University doing this kind of work for us and the wine industry would not be running quite as smoothly. So I'm delighted. You know, for years I've really wanted the university to become more involved and partner with our industry, and I think that's happening.
And so does the report cover the entire state of Oregon, just Southern Oregon? What's the
covers the entire state. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Jones and his students actually, it's a painstaking process. I don't envy them at all because most of these have to result in personal interviews as opposed to sending out, you know, things, you know, to be filled out online. But these surveys were, in fact, you know, you have to kind of, it's like herding cats. You have to kind of get people to fill out these surveys. So, and some people think it's proprietary. They don't want to give out that information. You have to convince them that, no, this is actually for the industry's good that we do this. So
it helps us all, is the pitch you have to make.
Mm-hmm. And it, what it has shown is an amazing continuing acceleration of growth for the wine industry, as of course those of us in it know, but I think it's always good to step back and look at it. We are the third largest and have been for some time grape growing region in the United States, significantly behind California, but and Washington, but right there. And you know, wine is being now grown in all 50 states, believe it or not, and some may perhaps with hybrid grapes, and some is pineapple wine. But I think every state takes some pride in that fact. But here in Oregon, of course, we've owe most of the reputation to the really top quality wines being made in the Willamette Valley. But we never forget that the first vineyard ever really registered and licensed in Oregon was in Southern Oregon in Roseburg, Hillcrest. And Richard Summer was the man who really came forward and did that in the 1970s, followed shortly thereafter by David Lett and the other pioneers who went into the Willamette Valley, of course, to plant Pinot Noir.
So was it a real niche sort of thing back then? Like, hey, let's try this and see if we can make a little Oregon wine niche for ourselves? I mean, did they envision what it has become?
The real founders who we owe so much of a debt of gratitude to, people like David Lett and David Adelsheim and others, really took a leap of faith that they could do this. It was a passion for them, and I don't think in their wildest dreams they thought the industry would grow to the level it has now. I mean, even in the last 10 years, I mean, we now have, according to this census data, we have about just short of 1,000 wineries now, and excuse me, vineyards in the state, and about 545 wineries operating in the state. So it's grown exponentially, and that growth has occurred across all regions, not only in the Willamette Valley, but of course in Southern Oregon, which encompasses the region from Roseburg all the way down to Ashland, out into the Illinois Valley and the Applegate. And of course, the Columbia Valley, Walla Walla. There is even a licensed winery out in Bend, and you know, so there. But the concentration exists in three areas primarily, and that's Southern Oregon, the Walla Walla Columbia Gorge, and the Willamette Valley.
So vineyards, you said 1,000 vineyards and 500 wineries,
mm-hmm.
roughly. And vineyards as distinct from wineries, because vineyards grow the grapes, wineries actually do the whole process?
It can be a little confusing, because some wineries, most wineries, do have vineyards. But then there are a number of grape growers who that's all they do. They're not interested in getting into making wine. I can understand that. I mean, at some point, I think it's enough just to grow really great grapes. But you know, the really benefit to agriculture is when a winery can come along and add value to those grapes and produce a product, put it in a bottle, and actually add considerable value to it.
We're talking about wine, wineries, and the growth of both in the state of Oregon with Michael Donovan, Managing Director at Irvine Vineyard, also with the Oregon Wine Growers Association Board and the Oregon Wine Board. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange in this conversation, 800-838-3760. Anywhere you can hear us. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Michael, does anything really jump out of this report from 2012? Any vast differences from 2011?
Well, we're a little cautious about the report shows huge increases in production and in acreage being planted, close to 25%. But I think that Greg Jones, who supervised the study, also cautioned that I think there was perhaps some underreporting in the previous years. I think this year's census is the most accurate that's ever been done. But in previous years, I think everyone kind of went, well, it wasn't. Quite as accurate as this year. So
was that because that was the first year you were trying to get people into the new system when they were not holding on to not releasing the information that mm-hmm. willingly? All right.
So I think we're taking it with a little grain of salt, but it's clearly on an upward trajectory. Oregon wine continues to be focused on you know, Pinot Noir being the primary grape planted in the state, and that includes in Southern Oregon. I think a lot of people think that Pinot Noir is only delegated up north, and in fact, the majority of all the grapes grown in Southern Oregon are Pinot Noir, and which in most cases are in fact shipped north to Pinot Noir producers up there. But more and more people are planting Pinot Noir down here. I think there was a notion early on in Southern Oregon that perhaps we could grow Pinot Noir in greater volume, perhaps not at the same level of quality, but it filled a niche because, you know, it could be produced into a $15 to $20 Pinot Noir, whereas in the Willamette Valley, typically the price of Pinot Noir is considerably more than that.
Is that what makes Pinot Noir? So, I mean, first, is Pinot Noir attractive to wine consumers? Is Pinot Noir attractive to wine producers because it's attractive to consumers? Or is it you can make more money on Pinot Noir?
Well, Pinot Noir, as we know, if we trace back its history to Burgundy in France, I mean, it is really one of the premier grapes in the world that's produced along with Chardonnay and, of course, Bordeaux varietals out of Cabernet and Merlot and et cetera. But I think that Pinot Noir occupies a very small niche of total wine consumed, but that niche is a very powerful one. The people who find that Pinot Noir appeals to them are willing to pay for that quality. Probably Pinot Noir ranks as in terms of the price paid for the bottles very high. Pinot Noir is a difficult grape to grow, as we know. It's a thin-skinned grape. It grows best in cooler regions.
Which Southern Oregon in the summer is not.
No, it's not. But I will say that, you know, Irvine, who I have the pleasure of working with now, is among a growing number of wineries and vineyards that are actually planting at higher elevations here in the in Southern Oregon and on eastern-facing slopes that will allow for that high heat to be mitigated, but still take advantage of the warm weather to ripen those grapes year after year. And that's not something that always can take place in the Willamette Valley. But Pinot Noir is always susceptible to vintage variation, and I think most Oregon wineries celebrate that there are very extraordinary vintages, and there are wines that reflect the struggles of cold, cooler weather, whether 2010.
I wonder how you're going to characterize the less good vintage years.
Well, we don't call them less good. We call them, they're an expression of of the vintage, and some are better than others. That's true.
I'm a little curious about some of the figures in this annual Vineyard and Winery Census report for Oregon. For example, more acres harvested between 2011 and 2012, but yet less of a yield per acre. Tons yielded per acre and tons produced total seem to have declined somewhat.
In Southern Oregon?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's always hard to completely generalize across the board on that. I think I noticed that as well, that in looking at the data, that can be attributed to just, you know, decisions made to lower the crop yields down to from a quality standpoint. Of course, as you get less yields out of a vineyard, most people believe that you'll actually produce more intense, more flavorful wines. And I think that, you know, that's not always true. It's not a total generalization across the board, but I think that in 2012 there were some anomalies to this. There were also more grapes crushed than were harvested, and we always kind of think, well, how does that happen? But in fact, that it probably you can extrapolate that there were grapes being brought in to this region from other areas that were actually being crushed here.
Michael Donovan's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Managing Director at Irvine Vineyard, President Emeritus of the Oregon Wine Growers Association Board and the Oregon Wine Board. We're talking about wines in Oregon and the growth of the industry. Join us at 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Cynthia in Talent, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Michael Donovan.
Thank you. Michael's probably aware of the Cowhorn Biodynamic Winery out in the Applegate.
I am.
Yeah, and one of the things I really love about their operation out there is the biodynamic practices, which really stress stewardship of the land and bringing balance to agricultural swaths, for instance, using hedgerows and integrating food crops and animals into the wine growing situation. And I'm just wondering how many of these wineries coming in now are going to be setting up organic or biodynamic operations?
Biodynamic? Thank you for that, Cynthia.
Mm-hmm. Well, great question. And I would answer it by saying I don't know the answer to that, but I hope that more and more will. Bill and Barbara Steele, who are the operators of Cowhorn Vineyard, have really staked out, I think, a unique niche for their operation, as they are the only certified biodynamic winery in Southern Oregon and vineyard. And as Cynthia indicated, it's a holistic approach to sustainable farming, but organic and what is also known in Oregon as live sustainable, which is an acronym for low impact viticulture enology. These are the programs in Oregon that actually have third party certification, and you know, from my perspective, more and more vineyards are moving in that direction. And wineries are actually even looking at third-party certification for their winery practices inside, as you would in a biodynamic winery. But I'm very optimistic. Oregon is always, I think, you know, there's no real data to ever point to say, you know, people are going to buy more of our wines because we are sustainable. So, in fact, if anything, all of the surveys we've done really don't indicate that's the reason people purchase wine initially anyway. However, beyond that, once people do try our wines here in Oregon and they discover our true dedication to actually being upfront and certifying these from a third party, then they have an allegiance, a loyalty to our brand in Oregon that I think is very important. But it's the right thing to do. It's the right way to farm. It's absolutely, you know, it's harder, and in some cases it's more expensive. But I think that you can spend an hour with Bill and Barbara Steele, and they will definitely tell you the advantages of farming biodynamically. And I would just add that their wines are among the highest rated wines currently being reviewed in Southern Oregon.
What does that biodynamic appellation mean?
Well, it's not an appellation, but it's a designation that it's, they choose themselves. And I was hoping you were going to ask that question because I really hate to be the person to be put on the spot to try to describe biodynamic. But you know, it's a program, of course, that
is it like one step beyond organic? I mean, at least get to that
point?
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, in terms of in Oregon, there's really four kinds of certification that are considered sustainable. One is the LIVE, which is basically an approach that really looks at very, very limited amounts of any kinds of chemical use in the vineyards. You're subject to audits and reports that you have to do. And it too looks at the whole effect of the total land in terms of making sure there's a riparian area that's part of it. There is, and then there, of course, there's organic. There's also Food Alliance, which is another third party certification. And then of course, biodynamic, which is certified by Demeter. And, they all, not being, or having ever been worked for a biodynamic vineyard, I can't tell you, and I would never try to tell you that, But I know the effects. I've tasted those wines from Cowhorn, and they're delicious.
Let's take some more calls. Charlie in Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking wines with Michael Donovan.
In vino veritas. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Yes, considering our current temperatures, I'm curious, how low a temperature will the vines in the Willamette Valley survive? The record low temperature for the valley, I believe, is minus 12. Although I think it might have gone, there's an even lower temperature back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And during the 50s, during that really hard cold snap, quite a few of the English walnuts died in the Willamette Valley. So I'm curious, how low a temperature will the vine survive to?
All right, thanks for that question, Charlie.
Well, it's a concern that we have. This is kind of an unusual weather pattern, especially so early in the winter. But it really depends on the strength of the vineyard itself to start with. If it's a new vineyard that has just been planted, this is kind of a critical period we're passing through, because new vineyards particularly are susceptible to low temperatures, especially this early in the season when they haven't perhaps completely hardened off from irrigation. Hopefully, you know, everyone did that quite a ways, but we had a late harvest too. So there were some vineyards that those who are irrigated, that I'm sure is a concern if the temperature drops down into the teens. But I think more and more farmers have instituted good frost control, which either by virtue of water spray or wind machines are probably looking at that, mitigating some of the effects of freezing weather. But it is a concern.
Couple minutes left. Let's take in Joe in Dillard. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Michael Donovan. Joe, go ahead. Joe in Dillard. Going once, going twice. Let's go on to Phyllis in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Michael Donovan.
Hi. I just wanted to focus in a little more closely on defining what biodynamic farming is based on what I've read. On a biodynamic farm, nothing comes in from the outside. Fertilizer materials and everything that's used in the farming process is produced on the farm, and so part of the purpose is to help mitigate disease and other aberrations that can come in from less known things coming in from the outside.
All right, thanks for that, Phyllis. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I don't claim to be an expert on biodynamic, but I believe everything she said is true. Biodynamics is really stems from early writings of Rudolf Steiner in the early part of the last century, and I think that people have taken those philosophies and focused them, and they're today, I think, producing really great effects in how land can be farmed.
To come back to the general picture for the wine business in Oregon, has it reached a ceiling, does anybody think? I mean, does it have a lot more room in which to grow? Has it reached market saturation? It seems like everybody's drinking wine these days.
Well, yeah, we like that. In moderation, I think people are enjoying wine. And for the first time 2 years ago, really, I think nationally the wine industry hit a milestone when Americans actually were recorded as consuming more wine than beer. And that's really a phenomenal threshold when you think about it, because the wine industry doesn't do any advertising to speak of,
Budweiser, for
not
sure.
Like Budweiser or Coors, and so we're not buying Super Bowl ads, that's for sure.
Yet.
And so I think people have moved to that, and I think it is a beverage of food. As I always like to say, it's a beverage of food. People, for the most part, do enjoy wine with food, and it's a cultural, I think more and more people are enjoying it like they have in Europe for centuries. And so to that extent, we're seeing a lot of growth, and I think where the future is going to take us here in Oregon is we're going to continue to grow. I would anticipate we're going to see, we have in Southern Oregon close to 100 wineries between the Umpqua and the Rogue Valley. I would anticipate in the next year for that to double.
Double, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll see. We'll certainly have you back in a couple of years. I mean, next year, certainly, to talk about the annual Vineyard and Winery Census Report. This is the second one with the help of Southern Oregon University. Michael Donovan is with Irvine Vineyard and the Oregon Wine Growers Association Board and the Oregon Wine Board. Lots of hats, one head. Thanks for joining us to talk about wine today.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
That'll do it for this segment of The Exchange. We'll take a short break and come back with Garrison Keillor.